Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded April 26th, 2023. Well, long before CIA whistleblowers Jeffrey Sterling, John Kiriakou, or Philip Agee revealed the crimes of the agency and warned of the dangers it posed to democracy and decency everywhere, there was David W. Condi. The first self-described CIA watcher is the subject of an extensive article just out at Covert Action magazine. Jeremy Kuzmarov is a journalist and author who also serves as managing editor at CAM. His book titles include Obama's Unending Wars and The Russians Are Coming Again, written with John Marciano. Jeremy's recent piece at Covert Action, one of a raft of great articles he's put out this month, meet a forgotten CIA critic who presciently characterized the agency as a cancer in 1970 book, is a fascinating profile of David Condi and his career spent exposing the criminal enterprise that is America's most famous intelligence organization. Also, Covert Action Magazine's Spring Fun Drive is on. It's a chance you have to support the kind of fearless journalism everyone says they want, if only they knew how. Today, Jeremy Kuzmarov on David W. Condi, the CIA core of the cancer, and more. Well, welcome back to the program, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always my pleasure. I've got to admit, I'd never heard of David Condi before reading your piece, and I'm sure that most of our listeners never have either. Just who Jeremy is or was David W. Condi?
I never heard of him either. Most of his books and writing were published in Japan or through foreign publishers. So he wasn't well known, but his papers are at the University of British Columbia, and he was discussed in a book by David Price. That's how I learned about him, because the FBI was surveilling him, and he was a target, you know, of the FBI Criminal Pro counterintelligence operation. Now Condi, yeah, and if anybody has the opportunity, they can contact the University of British Columbia archives, and they were very generous in sending some of his articles and stuff to me, and I think they may be able to send to any researcher or anybody who's interested in his writing. And maybe, yeah, I think it would be a good idea to republish his book, because in 1970 he published a book called CIA Core of the Cancer, a very well-researched expose of the CIA about 5 years before Philip Agee's book Inside the Company. And he had really quite intimate knowledge of the CIA. Now, his background was that he was Canadian, and then he moved to California, and then he served in World War II in the Pacific War, and he worked in the propaganda division. You know, he was developing anti-Japanese propaganda for the U.S. Psychological Warfare Branch. And then he worked for Douglas MacArthur in the U.S. Occupation of Japan, the supreme command of the Allied power. And he was in the film division, but he was basically fired because he was promoting more left-leaning films, you know, film that basically supported, like, labor struggles in Japan and that were very critical of the right-wing forces in Japan. And it was too, I guess he was seen as too left-wing by Douglas MacArthur, so he was fired. And then he covered the war crime tribunals for Reuters. He became a journalist and correspondent, and he saw how the U.S. was basically favoring, like, there's this guy Yoshio Kodama, who was this gangster who was allied with the right-wing faction in Japanese politics, and he was an outright war criminal in World War II, but the tribunal didn't go after him. And he would basically, you know, got off scot-free. So Condi was reporting on this contradiction and how the U.S. Military occupation forces and leaders like Douglas MacArthur basically favored these right-wing elements in Japan, even though they were talking about, you know, bringing democracy to Japan. They were really protecting the many of the ultra-right, and many war criminals like Kodama, who should have been prosecuted, were getting off. So he saw this contradiction and this deep problem of U.S. foreign policy, and he was pointing it out in his writings. And I guess that got him in further trouble, but that was, I guess, part of his political awakening about how the U.S. government was operating in Japan, and he saw the censorship, you know, MacArthur was imposing on newspapers, on information about Japan, and how, you know, the left wing was being demonized and the right wing was being rehabilitated, even though they were war criminals. Yeah, and again, this underside of U.S. foreign policy where they're aligned with outright gangster, because Kodama was one of the founders, I believe, of the Japanese Yakuza, and was involved in, like, drug smuggling and all kinds of illicit criminal activity, and yet the CIA was aligned with him, and he was being favored and immune from any kind of prosecution. So he saw that in real time, and he was reporting on this. And he you know, probed more into the CIA in Japan. I guess he witnessed it firsthand. And he saw that the censorship in the media, and he saw how the CIA had influence in shaping what was written about Japan within in Japan and also in the United States, a certain narrative that basically sugarcoated what was really going on, some of the repressive aspects of Japanese politics, you know, under the U.S. military occupation, like the drives against the political left in Japan, what the left was really advocating for. And his books, you know, the book was written in 1970. So then I think for a period he worked for the Far Eastern Economic Review, and he wrote some articles for there. And I guess he just published in different publications. Some of his writing were in Japan, and he was covering political developments. And then he wrote several books. And one was actually, you know, Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States became famous. Famous book, and Zinn became famous when that was published in 1980. But Condi had actually written a whole history of the United States that looked at, you know, it had a kind of similar framework, a frame of analysis as Howard Zinn, but his book was written years earlier, and he was looking at, you know, labor conflicts and the repression of the left in the United States and worker struggles and growth of American imperialism. So that's one of the books I think that's available at the UBC archive. And yeah, he wrote numerous other books. He was a very astute analyst of political developments in Southeast Asia, and he was looking at the CIA. You know, he's very critical of the CIA and U.S. government role in the Korean War. He saw how that was foreshadowing the Vietnam War and was a horrific war, and how the CIA was backing coups in Korea and South Korea and engineering political developments there, like in Vietnam, and how corrupt and repressive the governments that the U.S. was imposing. So he described that in numerous articles, and ultimately in his book, CIA Core of the Cancer, he goes into all this, and he also goes into the propaganda. He argued that the CIA was most effective as far as its propaganda, and he looked at the corruption, how the CIA corrupted or co-opted many intellectuals and writers of that era and sponsored all these center-left journals, and including journals in Japan and some more popular journals in the United States and Europe. And a lot of these writers were on the CIA, you know, on the CIA payroll, or the journal being funded by the CIA. And ultimately, I think more information on that was published. There was a book by Francis Stoner Saunders called, the European version was Who Paid the Piper? And it elaborated on what Condi had written about in his book, CIA Core of the Cancer, maybe some new information. But much of it was in Condi's book. That was later, I think it's better known now by historians, how the CIA funded the Congress for Cultural Freedom and was involved in what he was describing, supporting all these journals and intellectuals. And they were funding, like, books by, you know, supposedly reputable Asian scholars and experts who taught at top universities in the United States. And they were all getting their funding from the CIA, and they promoted, you know, the pro-U.S. line. And so he argued that that was how the CIA exhibited the most influence, I guess soft power. And he also goes into foundations and the Rockefeller interests and how they often prevailed in dominating U.S. foreign policy. And they funded these foundations, like Asia Foundation, and they were all designed to support U.S. foreign policy objectives. And it was ultimately the Rockefeller interests that were the main beneficiaries. And he goes into, like, the background, how Rockefeller interests, you know, dominated, like, in the Eisenhower administration. You had the Dulles brothers, Kennedy had Dean Rusk, who had been associated with the Rockefeller interests, Henry Kissinger. So he also goes into the background of a lot of political leaders and shows their connection with the Rockefeller family as well as the CIA. And yeah, it's really an amazing book, you know, as far as the detail and the knowledge of the author and the insights he has. So it's hopefully maybe the book would be republished, because I think, you know, for American audience, because even students of recent history would do very well reading this book. And he has, yeah, a section on Vietnam. But yeah, it was published in New Delhi, India, so I don't think it was known by Americans. Like, even when you had the anti-Vietnam War movement and you had some critics of the CIA emerging to the fore, like Philip Agee, and you had intellectuals like Noam Chomsky, who was critical of the Vietnam War and U.S. foreign policy. But I've never seen him reference Condi, so I don't think, yeah, his book was – it may have been censored or, you know, it was blocked. Americans never knew about it, but they would, again, be well to look into it today if they want to understand how the CIA has operated and the many crimes and atrocities it committed historically. And you can, you know, understand what they're doing today by understanding that history.
Well, Americans and Canadians, too. I mean, Canada is usually so house proud about taking possession of our sons and daughters that have done well overseas. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Jeremy Kosmarev. We're talking about and around his article, Meet a Forgotten CIA Critic, who presciently characterized the agency as a cancer in 1970. Book, and that book is CIA Core of the Cancer. Yeah, I was struck, Jeremy, with this idea of continuity, where Condi is during the war studying the propaganda methods of the Japanese thought police. And then he says, or you cite him saying that, well, this is how it was so easy for him to spot the propaganda after the fact, after the war, when the CIA started employing it, because he'd spent his career looking at it already, and it just rang familiar.
Yeah, that was part of his political education. Is yeah, he became himself a master propagandist during World War II, so he saw the methods. And, yeah, he saw how the CIA was, perhaps they even copied Japanese propaganda methods, and they really perfected it because, like he says at one point, you know, there are all these books, and nobody knew that the CIA was funding these books. So, I mean, that's really successful propaganda, because people don't think they're reading propaganda. They think they're reading objective study. And he lists some of the books that were very influential at that time, like books on Southeast Asia by those authors, you know, Robert Scalapino, a well-known Asian scholar of that era in the 60s, 70s, I think, at UC Berkeley, and Edwin O. Reischauer, had been an ambassador and then taught at Harvard. And they wrote these books, and they were, you know, quite, you know, well-informed about the countries they were writing about. So, you know, people who are, you know, students of that era and people who were interested in learning about Southeast Asia would pick up these books, and their books on Latin American countries, you know, that the CIA was involved in. And that would be their source of knowledge about the country. And they had no idea that it was being slanted by the CIA, or many things were being left out about how the CIA or U.S. Government may have been trying to manipulate things in those countries. And the U.S., you know, favored leaders would be presented very glowingly and adversaries very negatively. But they thought they were reading objective books. So that's especially effective as far as propaganda, when people don't know it's propaganda.
You quote David Kennedy as saying that people, when they think of the CIA, it's not their coups and their cloak and dagger that has been so successful, but really their fostering of academia and these what we call today think tanks, but these soft power centers that manipulate public opinion.
Exactly. And that's why I think his insights are important today, because this has continued. And, you know, I think the CIA is a little smoother, because in the 60s and 70s, you know, some of the terrible thing they had done, you know, came out, like in the Bay of Pigs and, you know, Guatemala, Iran coup. And I think now they're more effective in completely covering up what they're doing in foreign countries. And at the same time, yeah, they've continued what they were doing all along, which what he describes is to very, you know, covertly support propaganda and to manipulate public opinion very effectively. And we've seen in the Russian-Ukraine conflict, and we've seen, you know, anybody who has experience in higher education would see the influence and how certain narratives are advanced, and certain the professors who become most influential in certain fields, like the U.S.-Russian relation field or diplomatic history, very clearly have connection with the CIA. John Lewis Gaddis comes to mind. If you've studied U.S. foreign policy history, he was the dean of that field at Yale University, and he was in the Bush White House helping to plan the war in Iraq, and he promoted a very sanitized view of Cold War history. He wrote some influential books on the history of the Cold War that were widely, probably still widely used in college courses, and the book was praised by Henry Kissinger. So that type of intellectual has connection with the CIA. If he's not directly funded from him, he gets funding from or grants from corporate foundations connected to the CIA, and the CIA has influence in Ivy League schools, hiring process, I would imagine. So those are the kind of things he's kind of showing that happened throughout the Cold War, and that's continuing today. And students are learning history a certain way, history of the Cold War. And, these think tanks, as you point out, get their funding either directly from military industry or these foundations. And the foundation, the CIA may not directly fund them, but they're tied with these corporate foundations who are the ones that finance these think tanks that shape public opinion. And, of course, they've been able to infiltrate the major media and control the media narrative, New York Times, Washington Post. And I think Khan goes into that as well. So, it's a pattern that we see playing out over now more than 70 years. And that's why I say it's really would be a good idea for anybody who wants to understand how this propaganda system works to read his book, CIA Core of the Cancer. And that's why, perhaps I would maybe if there's somebody out there, I would hope maybe to try and get the book republished, maybe with a foreword, because I think it's very valuable for people to try and understand how this propaganda system works and how insidious it is and the influence of these foundations.
Well, it might be difficult considering the CIA's involvement with legacy publishing, too. That's another area where they've exerted a lot of control over the years.
Yeah, there are I don't think it would be published by a mainstream press, but there are some alternative presses that might be willing to publish it. So,
well, and on the very far other end, the other extreme is, and you mentioned the links with the Yakuza and the Japanese mafia and the CIA. Everybody's familiar, well, most people, I imagine, with the predecessor of the CIA, the OSS, and they're linking up with the Italian mafia and specifically Lucky Luciano during the Second World War and sending him into Sicily to work against the Nazis. And that led to an ongoing relationship between the spook world and the organized crime. Is this a similar deep entrenchment in Japan and the Orient with the Yakuza and other organized crime elements like that in the CIA?
Absolutely, yeah. And Khan has a chapter also on South Vietnam to show the continuity. He called it the CIA Kingdom of South Vietnam. And really, it was an invented nation essentially by the CIA. The Geneva Accord was supposed to unify Vietnam. There was no real basis for any division. And the CIA had huge influence in bringing to the fore leaders who were connected to organized crime, like Nguyen Cao Ky, who was a key leader, was the premier in the late 60s when the Vietnam War was going on, supported by the U.S., had been taken off a mission because of opium smuggling into Laos. And he was basically a political gangster. And Nguyen Van Thieu and his ruling circle also had a deep tie to the narcotics trade. And you can look in Laos as well. He's got material on that. In Laos, the CIA was supporting major drug traffickers, including some key top figures in the Laotian Air Force and Army was supporting in coups. And then you had the Hmong Army was an army of a tribal element in Laos to fight the communists. And there they grew opium and sold opium. So, the CIA was deeply enmeshed in the drug trade. But yeah, that goes back. It started, you know, the CIA alliance with organized crime and gangsters in the far right as part of its crusade against any leftist group or communism. Yeah, it originated in World War II with what we described and what Connie describes with Yoshio Kodama and the alliance with the far right and gangster elements in Japan during the U.S. military occupation. And of course, that was never publicized and but barely known today. And most history courses, if they cover the U.S. military occupation of Japan, very few courses would go into that sort of alliance.
Connie stayed in Japan and got a job with Reuters and started reporting on the military tribunals for the Far East, as you report, for Reuters. And then before MacArthur couldn't stand that either and had him actually booted out of the whole country.
Yeah, because he was reporting on what I was saying, Yoshio Kodama, and how the U.S. was letting him go, and he was a gangster, and that the U.S. was the tribunal was hypocritical the way it was carried out, and that the U.S. was aligning with far right factions in Japan. And yeah, he was booted out. He moved back to the States. He had a lot of trouble. I think he was persecuted by the FBI and his wife left him. But he went to work for Sears Roebuck, and he did pretty well in that company. Obviously a very smart, hardworking, and talented person. And he did well in the Sears Roebuck company. But then he was able to move back to Japan and work again as a journalist, I think for the Far Eastern Review, maybe some local publications in the 60s. Sure, his passion was writing and journalism, and he was a really gifted political analyst. If you read his articles, they're really well researched, and so I think many of them stand the test of time. As far as his sharp political analysis, and the writing style is good, and it's really the quality of research is what marks him. I think is extraordinary is just his sharp political insights and high-quality political analysis that stands up many years later. Stuff on Canada and how, U.S. company were taking over and how he was spotlighting some more nationalistic leader like in the Pierre Elliott Trudeau government that were trying to take more local control over, like the oil and keep out the Rockefellers. But we've seen how Canada has become more and more subservient to the U.S. and U.S. corporations since the Pierre Elliott Trudeau era. So I think he was prescient in his analysis of even U.S.-Canadian relations.
The fact that he would stick to it, it couldn't have been a safe way to go, not only for his career prospects, and you write about how his marriages were undermined by the FBI on more than one occasion and his personal life disrupted. But he stuck to his guns. I mean, it couldn't have been safe for him in Japan, for example, to be writing about the Yakuza and walking around as some foreigner without protection because he's pissing off everybody, it seems.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I think he was just a good reporter and he was reporting what's going on and then they fired him, in the 40s. I don't know if he was reporting about that again in the 60s, but he was reporting a lot about Korea. He wrote a book about the Korean War that is extremely critical of the Korean War and U.S. policy, and really he celebrated the epic victory of the North Korean people against U.S. aggression. And I think a historian may come to that perspective down the road. I think he was right that the U.S. was the aggressor. There's ample evidence of that the U.S., basically, much like Vietnam, they manufactured a regime in South Korea that murdered tens of thousands of its own people. They then encouraged, South Korea really, I think the evidence is strong that South Korea started the war. In the history you learn here, and I learned, I studied Cold War history, and they always said the North invaded the South. But then the more I looked into it, there's overwhelming evidence that the South, firstly, the South had started carrying out sabotage mission and tried to assassinate the North Korean leader in 1949. But there's strong evidence that they fired the first shot. And that comes out even Bruce Cummings, who's an outstanding historian, raises strong evidence about that. So, Cummings is very, very careful, but he, with the evidence, but so is Kahn. And I think, Cummings' book, if you read them, kind of very similar in analysis to Condi, who was writing many years earlier when nobody was saying that, you know, that the U.S. was the aggressor and nobody was looking at how oppressive and brutal the regime in South Korea was, backed by the United States, and nobody was really would support, even today, nobody would support North Korea, but if you look at the, you know, the big picture, North Korea was really defending their revolution. They were trying to assert a more independent economy, freed from Japanese colonialism and a successor. The government that the U.S. aligned with in South Korea was dominated by Japanese collaborators, and it was really an anti-colonial struggle of the North Korean people, and that's how it's viewed in North Korea today. And I think many would see it that way. There's so much propaganda about North Korea, and we're kind of conditioned to view them as evil. But if you get beyond that brainwashing, I think, and you see their perspective, which Condi does, I think they had a righteous cause, and they fought like the Vietnamese. I mean, many in hindsight would celebrate how the Vietnamese fought and defeated the, you know, greatest imperial power, who replaced France. And I think the Korean War should be viewed in the same way. The North Korean people stood up to a foreign invader who tried to destroy them. I mean, the U.S. bombed North Korea basically back to the Stone Age and killed a tenth of their population. And yet they endured that onslaught and survived, and that regime has endured up till the present. So I think Khan was right in his analysis of Korea. But, yeah, it wasn't a popular view at that time. And another who expressed it was Woody Guthrie. If you go in the Woody Guthrie Museum, which they have here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Guthrie supported North Korea and China and even wrote a song where he envisioned reenlisting in the military to take up arms for the Chinese against Douglas MacArthur, who he mocked, and against the American generals who Guthrie hated. So I think, you know, Khan had a similar view of Woody Guthrie about the Korean War. And I think it's the correct view. And to compare, you can compare Korea and Vietnam, and they're a very similar war. And Condi understood that better than most. Even many anti-war activists may not have understood that as well as he did.
He also didn't have a very high opinion of MacArthur, calling him a psychopath and a dictator. Well, the article is "Meet a Forgotten CIA Critic Who Presciently Characterized the Agency as a Cancer" in 1970 book that's about David W. Condi, a Canadian, one of Canada's own, a Canadian connection, as the CBC might say. You can find it not at the CBC, though, but at covertactionmagazine.com. We're going to take a break here, Jeremy, and then we'll come back and talk about some of the other articles you're working on. There's quite a plethora of them, and also talk about the spring fundraiser over there at CAM. Escape the Narrative. Guerrilla Radio. Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, I am still here with Jeremy Kuzmarov. Jeremy is the head editor, editor-in-chief of covertactionmagazine.com. Jeremy, you're managing editor, sorry. You guys are holding your spring fundraiser. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. We could use the financial support. We're hoping to expand our coverage. And, yeah, if you check out our website, www.covertactionmagazine.com, you'll see the kind of articles we produce. And, yeah, I think, this Condi article, we want to expose, the history of the CIA, the terrible things it has done. I mean, I think it's important to know the history so you can understand what it might be doing today, including this realm of propaganda, which is so powerful. So, I mean, I would hope that the magazine would help enlighten people. And, yeah, we cover a mix of historical articles as well as current events. We have a recent article like about the covert operations involving Russia and the attempt to smear Russia, even link Russia to this recent document link by Jack Teixeira. And that's continuity related to what we're discussing, that the CIA is constantly trying to manipulate public opinion and make, the Russians out to be these diabolical people trying to undermine, U.S. democracy and politics. And they've been doing that since the Cold War. So we're trying to expose that, educate the public, and hopefully build a movement to challenge the power of the CIA, which is a cancer, as Khan pointed out, as Philip Agee pointed out. It's a rogue agency that carried out criminal activity, and it has to be stopped, like other cancers.
In Korea, I guess we should remember, too, that North and South are a construct, that the Korean people were singular until they were torn asunder by the Japanese occupation and by the Americans taking advantage of it. But they see themselves as one people, divided artificially even now, or at least in the North, they certainly see it that way.
Yes.